Hello there, and welcome to In Your Own Kin. I'm your host, Charlotte. I'm a lover of great food, sometimes artist, sleep-in advocate, storyteller, mama, and postpartum professional in Naarm, Melbourne. Each week, I'll be chatting to families about their journey into parenthood, the grandest of adventures. Parenting is beautiful, messy, sparkly, hard work. You were never meant to do this alone. It's time to get comfy in your own kin. In Your Own Kin acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land where you are listening to today's episode. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that the telling of stories has happened here since time immemorial. In Your Own Kin is recorded by the Birrarung on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty of these lands has not and is not ceded, and it remains stolen. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. In this week's episode, Beth shares her parenthood journey and reflects on adventures with her partner Tristan and their daughter Poppy. Beth is a midwife and childbirth educator and the creator of Power Birth. Beth's Instagram at birthwithbeth is bursting with reliable information and resources to help you navigate pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. Beth speaks with such warmth and generosity about her pregnancy, meeting Poppy, and life as a family of three. Beth reflects on the sheer joy and wonder of parenthood whilst acknowledging the heartbreak of navigating this season in lockdown without her family. This episode will have you laughing along and give you prickly eyes. We talk about conscious conception, navigating pregnancy sickness, preparing for birth, postpartum planning, matrescence, and the wild and wondrous adventure that is parenthood. This is one that you are going to want to come back to over and over. Here's Beth. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Beth. My gosh, it's just such a pleasure to be able to sit and chat with you.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Beth, would you like to begin by letting people know a little bit about you, who's in your family, and where you're based?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Beth and I'm a midwife based in Melbourne, and I live here with my partner Tristan and our three-month-old daughter Poppy. And I guess a little bit about me is that I work as a midwife, but I also run an online childbirth education business, which has kind of like an educational Instagram called Birth with Beth. And it's been such a joy. It's about a year and a half old, and it's been such a joy to facilitate that page because it's connected me with lots and lots of other people in the birth space and lots of mums. Yeah, it's been really, really special.
Oh, it's such a magic page. Honestly, the information that you share on there is the perfect combination of like no BS, but like super accessible. Yeah, beautiful, reliable information source. Well done.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. Because, yeah, I think it is hard sometimes in pregnancy. It's such an overwhelming time of life. You need that direct information. Even as a midwife, when I was pregnant, I found myself by, you know, all the different opinions and perspectives. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard to wade through all the info, isn't it, and find something, yeah, that sits right.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk to me about the things that make your heart sing, Beth. What lights your fire?
Oh, so I guess working so closely with women throughout such a vulnerable, exciting, transformative period of life as a midwife really up. Like, I absolutely love it. I love how quickly you connect with people when you're caring for them in pregnancy and working with them in pregnancy. And that is a part of my midwifery career that I'll just never get sick of. Like, I absolutely love it. And I guess outside of work, just carefree times with friends and family, which have been in super short supply throughout the pandemic. And I really have missed just that, like, easygoing, no stress time just spent with people that you love and people that are super fun, you know, in the sunshine, being outdoors, like all of that really basic stuff just makes me so happy. But yeah, those would be my two biggest things, I think.
Yeah, lovely. Oh, we were having a chat beforehand, but my gosh, just being able to reconnect with your loved ones, it feels like such a special gift at the moment. It's so lush.
It really is. And lush is the right word. Like, you just sit there with your friends and family and you're like, this is the best.
Totally. Talk to me about life pre-parenthood. Talk to me about life when it was you and Triss.
Yeah, so I guess life when it was me and Triss was very footloose and fancy free. Nowhere near as I guess it was busy, but in a totally different way. Like, it was just, I traveled a lot in the years leading up to conceiving Poppy. And I was actually reflecting on it the other day, just how amazing that period of my life was. In 2018 and 2019, I did a lot of travel, totally unaware of what was to come. Just booking flights left, right, and center, chewing through my savings, just having a really, really good time. And I think, yeah, prior to parenthood, we definitely just embraced spontaneity, I think would be the best way to put it. Never having too many plans, just seeing what the weekend brought, kind of going with the flow and never really worrying too much about anything, because you kind of get to a point in adulthood where you're like, I know I can take care of myself. Like, even if I have a rough week, it's only me. So I think that was probably the biggest feature of life pre-parenthood. And then as you have learned as well, like, once your bub arrives, you just, everything shifts. Not necessarily for worse, it's just different.
Yeah.
So that's been a big adjustment, I'd say.
Yeah, my gosh. And you're right, it's not for the worse. I think we really demonize this idea of losing all your freedom when you become a parent, but things just take a whole lot longer to organize.
Absolutely. Like, I went and got a coffee with someone this morning and you would have thought I was packing for a weekend away. The logistics that I was going through in my head, I was like, okay, so Poppy woke up at this time. Will we start to grizzle around here? Like, I wonder if she'll go to sleep in the car, or maybe should I get, like, you're just going through, like, what if she cracks it? What should I do? Have I packed enough for Nappy? None of this, just like, grab your keys, grab your phone, and walk out the front door. But I agree with you. I think we have to be careful not to. So many people said to me in pregnancy, like, oh, you know, just you wait, like, life's about to get hard. And I felt like there was a lot of negativity surrounding this transition, whereas it's like, yeah, it might be a little bit harder and there's certain things you've lost in terms of your spontaneity. But, yeah, I think it's just such a one-eyed way to look at it, being like, oh, you can't just walk out the door, you can't go overseas anymore.
Yeah, there's so much that we gain, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, you can hear the puppy slurping.
Got a very important guest joining us.
Yeah, like, all 3-month-olds, she's just like woken up a whole stack. What used to just be a really quick feed, she now wants to look at everything and pull on my t-shirt and touch everything, and then she'll hear something in the background and her head will whip around and I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, the boob gymnastics. It's a real vibe.
Yeah, it just came on so suddenly too. Like, she was a little sleepy potato, I swear, like 3 weeks ago. Now she's a curious little lady and she just wants to be part of everything, which I'm absolutely loving, but it's totally different.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. My gosh. Talk to me about the decision to expand on your family. Was that something that you and Triss spoke about?
Yeah, we definitely did. I think in truth, Tristan was probably ready maybe a year or two before me, but was quite respectful that obviously it's a big transition for mums, so was quite, you know, happy to wait and just see how we went, but was very much excited to start a family when the time came. And then we got engaged in, yeah, I think it was January of 2020, maybe. Yeah, I think so. Again, blissfully unaware of just about how chaotic life was about to become. And we'd planned to get married at the end of the year. And then obviously that was shelved just because of the pandemic and everything. Yeah. And so it kind of was just a natural progression of like, look, that is on pause for now. But the thing that we would have done next is consciously try to expand the family. Or why don't we just see what happens? And if we're not, you know, if we're not pregnant by early next year, then maybe we'll just try and have a small wedding when things open up. And if we are, then we'll just roll with it. And we were super, super lucky that, Poppy, we conceived Poppy within sort of 3 months of deciding that that was what we wanted to do. Mm. And I had had a Mirena IUD. So do you know what an IUD is, Charlotte? You probably do.
Yeah, I do. But would you like to explain for people listening, just in case?
Yeah. So it's just a form of long-lasting contraception. It stands for intrauterine device, and mine was Mirena. And it basically just is something that gets popped inside your uterus and then provides around 5 years of very reliable contraception. And I'd done my research prior to getting it, and I knew that the return to fertility was quite reliable with this particular contraceptive. So I guess I wasn't expecting problems, but at the same time, when you've had a long-term contraceptive, your cycle, you don't really know what your cycle, how your cycle is. And so I did have a bit of a like low level concern. I was like, oh, this could take a while, you know, like I'm kind of prepared to strap in for a year or so of trying, because I'd never tried to conceive a baby before. So I had no idea what that was going to look like.
Yeah.
But we were so, so lucky that we had a really easy conception journey this little one. And I realize how just how privileged we are, really, because it's not something that everyone gets to enjoy. So I was so grateful. Oh, sorry, Miss Pot. But yeah, so we were quite prepared for the decision. Like, we were quite consciously trying to conceive, and we were really, really excited when that all happened.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about conscious conception. I think it's such an interesting space, and we're starting to hear a lot more about it. How were you going about consciously conceiving Pops?
Yeah, so I went to the GP and just had a chat and was like, look, I'm hoping to start trying for a baby, and got some preconception bloods done. And so I kind of felt good that like all my immunizations were up to date and all of that kind of stuff. And then once I got the Mirena out, I don't know, I think I was just very mentally like letting go of my like not single life because I'm with Tristan, but my life. Like I had a lot of like processing of thoughts being like, what will this change look like for me? And as I mentioned, Tristan was probably quite ready a little bit before me, but I felt like I really needed to come to terms with being a mum and starting that journey, because I think as a midwife, we see firsthand, not the birth per se, because that's, you know, as significant as it is, it's 1 to 2 days of your life, but the reality of these little babies and taking a baby home and rejigging your family and your home life to have one be at the center. I feel like I'd seen a lot of that firsthand, and perhaps more than other people. So I felt like I had to really like accept that that's what we were doing and be really ready for that and really excited. And then I also, it sounds like a little bit woo, but I also just did a lot of like thanking my body for, mentally I was like, you know, thank you for being ready, and thank you for being healthy and young, and thank you for what we're about to do together. And I didn't really share that with anyone else, but it was just something that I kind of consistently said to myself throughout the process. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Oh my gosh, it makes complete sense. And I think that's such that beautiful honoring of, like a body that works so darn hard, right?
Yeah, so hard. And actually when we when we conceived, and like that first few days after I found out I was pregnant, I actually cried a lot, and not out of sadness or fear or happiness. It was none of that, really. It was just like this overwhelming acceptance that my body was no longer just mine. I was like, wow, I'm about to share my body for the next 9 months and then beyond, because I was hoping to breastfeed. But truthfully, even if you're not breastfeeding a baby, your body is well and truly shared, because they hang off you like a little koala for a long, long time. So yeah, I felt like this weird feeling of surrendering to that and letting go. And I was quite tearful for those first few days. And then once I got through that, I was just so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a roller coaster of emotions that time, like so wild and so wondrous. Talk to me about that moment of seeing a positive test. What was that like?
It was a shock, but it wasn't. I think in my gut, I'd been saying to myself, no, I can't be pregnant. Like, we've only really just started trying. I'd been on some night shifts. So I was like, not that unusual that my period would be late because I'm all over the place. And obviously your body relies on, you know, being settled and rhythm and things to have that regular cycle. And so I actually waited for Tristan to go to work because he was so excited and ready that I didn't want to disappoint him, which is such a weird headspace to be in hindsight. Oh, like I did the test and then it came up positive and he'd already left work and I was like, oh my gosh, now I have to wait like 8 hours on my own. I'm burning to tell him this was the worst idea ever. Wanted to be sure. I wanted to like process it and then share that exciting news with him when I knew that that was the case. So I didn't say like, oh, my period's late, like I think we're pregnant. I just kind of left it alone and ignored it and then did a test. And I just burst into tears out of kind of like shock and happiness. And it's such a weird moment. And I just straight away like hand on my tummy and I was like, oh my gosh, hello, like you're in there. And all day I just kind of couldn't focus. Like I was teaching online education at that time and I had some classes later in the afternoon. I felt like I was on total autopilot in the back of my mind being like, you're pregnant, you're growing a baby, you're going to tell Tristan tonight. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah. Yeah, it was just insane. Like it's just such a big thing, isn't it? And yeah, so, so exciting and wonderful.
It feels like, yeah, you just kind of want to climb onto the rooftops and shout like everything has changed, but it's just like an everyday marvel. It's happening all the time.
Yeah, exactly right. You can't wait to tell people, but then you're also just like, and I think we all have a low level of concern the whole first trimester. You're just like, you know, part of you is just beyond excited. And then part of you is like, self-protect, like don't get too attached, like let's just wait every week, you know, every week that goes by is a good week. And I don't feel like it overtook me too much, but it's definitely there, isn't it? It's just in the back of your mind, just being like, okay, well, you know, just wait and see, wait and see, wait and see.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's hard when you're in this space, like working as a midwife and supporting families that experience all kinds of things. It's hard to take that midwife hat off, isn't it?
It definitely is. And I actually get that question a lot of like, is being a midwife more or less stress inducing? A weird amount of calm came over me in pregnancy where I just felt like as a midwife, as much as you're aware of all of the things that can happen, you're also very aware that most of those things are completely out of your control.
Yeah.
As much as we like to catastrophize like what you eat in pregnancy and exercise and don't do this and do that, most of what happens when you see an unfortunate, a sad outcome is just completely out of that mum's control. There is nothing she did or didn't do that contributed to that outcome for the most part. And I think I knew that in my core, and I knew that worrying about it wouldn't change the outcome, but it would change my experience of, it would rob me of any joy.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And I told myself, I had like a little mantra in the early days of, if the worst happens, it will hurt like hell, but you will heal. And if it doesn't happen, then you're, you know, every week that goes by, you're getting closer and closer to meeting your baby. So I kind of just told myself, like, whatever happens, you'll be okay. And yeah, that really helped me, I think, to just tell myself that, yeah, it would be the worst feeling, but you're strong enough to get through it.
Let's talk about support at that time. Did you share your pregnancy news early on, or was that something that Teresa and you held on to for yourselves for that first trimester?
We really wanted to share the news face to face. We'd been engaged and then had intentions to get, we're from New South Wales and we'd had intentions to get back across the border and celebrate that with our family. And we'd had many foiled attempts just because of lockdowns and things. Yeah. And I felt really like, I was like, I don't want to do another life milestone on Zoom. I just don't want to do it. I want to tell my mom and I want to hug her and I want to tell my sisters and I want to see the look on their face. And I would have been very happy to share before the sort of 12 week where they say, oh, you know, wait for 12 weeks. I'm not a big fan of that. I think you should share whenever it feels right for you. If you want to wait and that makes you feel more comfortable, then wonderful. But if you want to shout it from the rooftops the minute that you get your positive sign, then go for it, because there's no right or wrong. But for us, we just had to hang in there until the borders opened and we were able to go home. And it was around Christmas time. I was 9 weeks pregnant and we shared it then. So it was good and bad. Good that we got that moment that I wanted, which was standing in a room with the people we love sharing that exciting news. Mm-hmm. But it was hard. I was quite sick for many of those weeks, and my sisters would call me and stuff, and I'd just be this like lethargic mess, and I'd be so zoned out and so uninterested in what they were sharing. And I, in those moments, I wished I could have just been like, oh, like, just so you know, I'm not being a bad sister. I'm just really, really sick because I'm growing. So I guess in that way support was a little bit lacking, but I had Tristan and he was really wonderful.
You've spoken a little bit about experiencing pretty horrific pregnancy sickness, and you've also been really open talking about your mental and emotional health. Could you share a little bit more about that, Beth?
Yeah, sure. So I guess up until the week six, I felt okay. I felt a little bit tired, but I was like, you know, growing a baby, that seems fair. From about the 6 week mark, I started throwing up and was nauseous all day. So I will never use morning sickness again.
Biggest lie ever.
Biggest lie. And I think it's hugely, I think it's one of the reasons that so many mums don't get the support that they need, because everyone just assumes they're a bit crazy in the morning, and then come midday, you know, they can down a piece of toast and they're all good. But in reality, for so many people, you just feel completely unwell from the minute that you wake up to the moment that you go to sleep. And that was really the case for me. So I was throwing up quite consistently every day. And then on top of the actual vomiting, I felt a fatigue that I have never experienced in my life. And I've done night shifts for quite a while. Like, I felt bone tired to the point where my limbs felt heavy. I remember one day I went to pick up a package from the post office, which is a 3 minute walk from my house. And I feel like it took me half an hour to get there. I had to keep sitting down. I got home and just felt like I had run a marathon. I just had to lie down for the rest of the day. I was just so sick. And I'm someone that jumps up in the morning, would make the absolute most of the hours in my day. I really thrive off being busy. Mm. And so I just felt, I said to Tristan, it went up until about the 18 to 20 week mark. I finally stopped vomiting completely at about 20 weeks. It definitely eased off at about 18 weeks. But I remember just saying to Tristan, like, really tearfully, like, I just don't feel like myself. Like, I can't go for a walk. I can't eat. I can't talk to people. Like, having a phone conversation would knock me out. I'd just be like, I just can't even talk to anyone. And I think as well, there's a bit of a misconception, and even as a midwife, I bought into it that, you know, 12 weeks, just get to 12 weeks and it'll all just fade around. And so at 11 weeks, I was like, okay, one more week, you can do this, keep on. And I got to 12 weeks and it was peaking. I was vomiting like 6-7 times a day. I could hardly keep my eyes open. And I just thought, oh my goodness, like, it's never going to end. I can't, you know, it's never going to end. And I think as well, being a midwife, I have looked after some very, very sick women.
Yeah.
And I kept downplaying my own symptoms in my head, being like, it's not that bad, Beth. Like, come on. You know, you're just a young, healthy person. It's just pregnancy, which is something that I would never, ever say to anyone else. I would give them so much love. You're so unwell. Let's wrap you up in support. Let's get you some fluids. Let's, you know, fix this, or at least let's comfort you through this experience. But I just, for some reason, I think we're all guilty of it, I couldn't give myself the same kindness. I just kept saying, like, come on, you know, pull your socks up, get to work, you'll be right. And it wasn't until I visited a GP at about 16 weeks, because I'd actually started faint. I fainted a couple of times. I passed out at work on a night shift. And
oh, Beth.
Looking back now, I think, what were you thinking? But it's so bizarre what you do when you're in the thick of it. And it wasn't until I went to the GP and was like, yeah, look, I don't think I'm very well. And she was like, yeah, me either. That's not normal at all. And it turns out I was quite anemic as well, so that wasn't helping. My iron had taken a massive dive. And she was so brilliant. She was just like, you know, you're allowed to be really happy that you're pregnant and excited for this baby, and also just feel like you're waiting for a really happy, positive time. And it was really nice to be validated, because it really had affected my mood. Like, I was in such a low mood every day. I would wake up, vomit, sit on the edge of my bed and think, oh my God, I have to do another day. And I would just cry and then put my scrubs on and go to work, get home, crawl into bed, cry. And Tristan was like, I have never seen you like this. Like, we've been together for years and years. And he was just like, this is not you. And yeah, it was just such a big learning curve, I think, that yeah, your physical health can absolutely impact your mood and you need to ask for help if that's the case.
Yeah. It's a big job. It's a big job growing a human.
Such a big job. And also I felt this weird thing of, I remember we got to like 14, 15 weeks and we'd had that scan and everything was looking good. And Tristan was like, let's, you know, start telling people. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then some days I just didn't want to, because, and this sounds awful, but I didn't have the energy to be positive and celebratory. So people would be like, oh my God, you're having a baby. That's so exciting. And I just couldn't even lift. Like, I was like, I cannot match your energy. Like, I just threw up in a bin. And I feel I've slept for 10 hours, but I feel like I've been awake for 100 hours. Like, my brain is off. And that was a really weird feeling because I was like, I am so happy to be pregnant. And something else that I found hard was that when I did share, like, oh, I've been unwell, a lot of people were like, oh, that cheeky baby, like, oh, you know, look what they're doing to their mum. And I felt like instant protection. I was like, it's not their fault. Like,
totally.
I know it's different for some people, and they understandably, the sickness really impacts their ability to like bond and connect with that pregnancy because you're just in a totally different headspace. But it didn't for me at all. Like, I still felt really like in love and protective over the baby, and it was something separate. I was like, this is just my body, not the baby. But yeah, just a wild, wild time. And coming out of that at 20 weeks and being like, oh, I haven't vomited today, and like,
yeah,
I can live in the block and not feel like I'm gonna pass out. I just was like, I didn't even realize how hard or how down I was until I wasn't.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that like haze lifting. It's just like, hello world, I'm back.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I remember I have a personality. I'm not just this this person that lies face down on the couch. Like, I couldn't even watch a TV show because I just couldn't concentrate. I was just like, I'm just gonna lie here inside.
Yeah, someone get me some hot chips ASAP. So hard. Oh, I really love the way that you call it pregnancy sickness as well. I think I heard you say that for the first time in your magical Australian Birth Stories interview. And I just felt so seen when you said that, because you're right. You feel like you actually feel like you're going crazy. It's all consuming. You cannot think of anything else.
100%. And it's so strange, like the guilt I felt for taking sick leave, because I was like, it's this morning sickness, like I should be able to push through. And people, oh, why don't you do like a PM shift instead? And I was like, because it goes all day. Like, I can't stress this enough. Like, it's not better come lunch, you know. And for some people it is, and maybe that's where the name has come from. But I think it's so important, if you're listening to this and you've been through it or you are going through it, you're not making it up. Like, it's not in your head. It's hard, and it feels hard because it is hard, kind of thing.
Totally. Let's talk about support at that point. Were there things that were happening around you that were making that easier?
Look, yes and no. I think to my detriment, I went really inward, and I didn't know what I needed. Like, I couldn't ask for help because it was the first time I'd been through it, and I was like, I just have no idea what's going to help. Tristan was amazing, and he just kind of listened and didn't try to find a solution, and wasn't trying to constantly pep me up. He was just like, whatever you need, let's just do it. And he was like, you need to feel bad about eating. Some days the only thing I could eat was like a salada.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think I'll ever eat saladas again.
No, I have never looked at a salada since. I used to carry a baggie of saladas around.
Yes, in my scrubs pocket. I just had like all of these little Jats crackers. It was just so gross.
Beth.
Yeah, it's funny what you do. But support-wise, I think, yeah, like I said, I kind of shut down and I didn't reach out for as much support at the time. But what I did do when I started feeling a bit better, I was really honest and open with people about how I'd been feeling as a way of processing it retrospectively. Because I think had I just kind of been like, oh, well, that happened, move on, it would have potentially tainted my ability to like enjoy the rest of my pregnancy. But I really like said to people, like, I've been having a hard time, you know, that's why I wasn't talking. And it was so funny. All of my girlfriends at work were like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you've been so quiet on lunch break and stuff. Like, silently in the corner when I'm usually the chatty, bubbly. They're like, yeah, you have been really quiet. So I think just being honest with people afterwards and just being like, yeah, I need to talk about this because I've been feeling pretty rubbish and I've definitely noticed a change in my mood, helped me to kind of process it and then be able to move on and enjoy the more joyful aspects of growing a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. How were you preparing for the birthday? I know that that's your big love. How are you imagining that day for yourself?
Yeah, so in the lead up to the birth, I did decide to do classes with Tristan, not because I felt that I needed to learn new things, but more just because I wanted to do something as a couple.
Yeah.
And like, obviously I teach and have designed childbirth education courses. And so arguably it's sort of like, oh, you may not have learned anything new, but it was about going and doing something as like a mum and a dad preparing to meet their first baby and something that we could do as a couple so that we could get on the same page. And I guess as well, Tristan and I have been together since I was a student midwife. So he has, I think he could probably be a midwife. I talked to you off about it for years. So he knows more than the average person, but just shifting into like, this is our experience was really important. So we went and did hypnobirth and we were really lucky. It just happened to fall on the weekend when Melbourne was locked down. So we actually got to go and do it in person, which was amazing. And look, again, I don't think it was anything content wise for us. It wasn't anything groundbreaking that we didn't know. But it was so nice to go into a space where I wasn't a midwife and just I was just a mum and I was just listening to someone else tell me all of these things and take them on with like a totally new set of eyes.
Yeah.
And to have these hands-on tools, like, you know, we learned about light touch massage and hip squeezes and different relaxation tracks that he could play and all of that kind of stuff. And it was really nice. And actually before the second day, Tris said, you know, make sure that you're really leaning into this. He's like, we've just got to lean in. Like, I know it's tempting to kind of switch off because we know so much, but he's like, let's just really give it a red hot go kind of thing. And we really got into the meditations and stuff, which is not our usual vibe, but we just thought, let's do it. Like, let's when in Rome. And so we did that as a couple. And then I was doing a lot of work in the background around pain. And not because I know everyone's perspectives are different, but I kind of reject the notion that like birth isn't painful and that we can, you know, that you can have like a pain-free labor if you just relax. That's just for me, just doesn't make sense because my whole thing around pain is learning to work with it, learning to trust that it's not pathological, that you're safe, that it's powerful and that your body is creating it so it can't be bigger than you.
Mm.
And that's the way I teach about pain. And so a lot of the work that I did in the lead up to Poppy's birth was really believing that and really like getting myself ready for that. And so I listened to a few interviews with Rhea Dempsey, which I'm sure you know across her. Yeah, she's amazing. And just rethinking contractions as they're not negative. They're just this thing that your body creates and it's a force that you're absolutely capable of managing because your body wouldn't give you anything that you're not capable of handling. So I did a lot of work around that. And then something else that I focused on was just like postpartum preparation and just for that shift into motherhood and for everything that comes with it. And I actually had access to Sophie Walker's The Birth Class, Sophie from Australian Birth Stories, has released a beautiful interview series called The Birth Class, and it's kind of paired with another interview series that she did called Discovering Motherhood.
So good.
Yeah, and some of the interviews in there are just fantastic. So I did a lot of work around sort of my headspace. And then I actually had, I think, I didn't realize, but I had a bit of like almost, I guess, secondary trauma from a few things that had happened at work that I needed to process. I'd never experienced fear around birth and I generally felt really confident in my ability to birth. I had a bit of fear about the cascade of intervention because I'd just seen you know, there've just been a few really tough outcomes that I'd been closely involved with at work in pregnancy. And it really hits different when you're growing a baby and you're
totally
supporting mums through some really tough stuff. Mm. And so I didn't even realize I was holding on to it until my midwife was like, how are you? And how do you feel about giving birth at work? And I just was like, oh, I haven't even really thought about how I feel, but I actually felt really overwhelmed and started crying in that appointment. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, I guess I actually have some stuff that I need to work through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there was like some logistical stuff that we did to prepare as a couple and having strategies, but most of it was mind work for me and just getting really ready for birthing this baby.
I love that you mentioned that you were doing some postpartum planning, because I think in the excitement of the birthday or the imminent birthday, we can kind of forget that actually we've got to look after ourselves and a babe or two or three on the other side. How were you preparing for postpartum? What kinds of things were you doing in pregnancy to look after yourself in that time?
Yeah, so I did a lot of cooking because I knew that we wouldn't have as much support as we would have liked, because it was becoming very clear in the later stages of my pregnancy that we were heading into another lockdown, which was likely to be quite long. And my family are all from New South Wales, so that was actually a really sad time as I approached 40 weeks, knowing that my mum and dad possibly wouldn't be able to come and meet Poppy for a long while, and they still haven't been able to meet her. Mm. And so I kind of thought, all right, you need to stock your freezer. You need to make sure that there's heaps of extra food in the house, because nutrition is so important postpartum. And, you know, whether you have a really uncomplicated vaginal birth or you end up having an unplanned cesarean section, you still have a lot of healing to do. Your tissues have a lot of healing to do. You've lost blood and you need to like replenish your energy stores, all while creating milk and being up all hours of the night. And I think the physicality of postpartum has really shocked me. There is a few weeks where you get to mooch on the couch and that's wonderful, but then there's many more weeks that your baby needs lots of motion, lots of baby wearing, lots of walking around, holding them upright, bouncing on a football, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I think that was one of the big things I got ready for. And then, again, I think Tristan and I had quite an open dialogue around, like, you know, the next little part might be challenging, like beautiful and joyful and exciting and wonderful, but challenging.
Yeah.
And so we talked quite openly about, you know, mental health red flags. To be fair, I think Tristan was probably a bit nervous having seen me go quite downhill in the first trimester. And so I said to him, I was like, you know, it's okay. Like, if you think that I need mental health support, like, you're allowed to say that to me. Like, you know, yeah, really well. And so we had a conversation about like how to talk to each other if we thought one or both of us needed some help, and not be afraid to be like, hey, like, you don't seem to be doing too well. Is there something you want to talk about? Or, you know, is there something I can do? Yeah, just lots of prep, lots of conversations around like expectations and sleep and how we were going to manage that period of really broken sleep. And we muddled through in the end. Like, it's all a blur, beautiful blur.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to remember.
Time really softens the edges of all of those memories, doesn't it?
Oh, doesn't it just? Like, I can't even remember. You know, probably worked every hour or 2 hours for a long time and I can't even really remember it. I'm like, what did I do? I think I just, like, got up, you know, put her on the boob, sat there, had a tonic, put it back, got it off, got back up.
So wild. Beth, I will link to your amazing birth story so that we can spend some more time in postpartum. Your birth story is so, so magic. Tell me about those first few moments as a family of three. Tell me about meeting Poppy Earthside for the first time.
I've got actual goosebumps like thinking about it. It was just the most incredible moments. Like, I say this in the birth story interview, but I was genuinely euphoric. Like, I felt so high, and there's like videos of us very, very soon after Poppy's born. And I've got like dinner plate eyes. I'm saying and I'm doing like really random things. I'm chatting and I'm holding her, and it's so weird to look at because I'm like, that girl is off her face. She is off her face on oxytocin. But it was just like this pure relief when I lifted her up onto my chest and I could feel that she was like this little pudgy, beautiful thing. And Tris was the one that said, oh, she's a girl. And I think we just felt like enormous pride, like just Tristan and I as a couple, we just felt like, oh my gosh, we did it. Like we birthed this amazing little girl, and I felt really, really proud. I'd set out, I guess, with the goal of having a physiological birth. I really wanted to give my body time and space to do that. And I want to put in here, like, whenever I say that, a lot of people will message me saying, like, why are you so anti-intervention? And I really promise you I'm not. I've worked in tertiary settings for a long time, and intervention can be so, so wonderful and positive for many people. But just my personal goal was to really let my body do its thing as untouched as possible, because that's, I felt and feel in my core that that was the right thing for me. And yeah, for it to play out like that, I just felt we were just overjoyed, and to look at her little face, and I felt like I was like, of course you look like this, of course you're a girl, like everything just felt really like obvious. I was like, yeah, like of course it was you, of course it was Poppy, and of course you look exactly like this. That's fine. And then also just shock that she was 4.2 kilos. 4.2 kilo baby at 40 plus one day.
Beth, and that's amazing.
I just was like, I'm really glad I didn't know that before. Well, yeah, I said to my midwife, I was like, did you know? She's like, oh, look, she was palping on the bigger side. She was like, I didn't think she'd be 4.2s, because I was measuring, and that was something else in pregnancy. The big baby rhetoric
drives me. Yeah.
Had said to my midwife, look, I don't want to know what I'm measuring. You will tell me if there is genuine concern if this baby appears to be too big or too small. I'm happy to have more investigations, but like I'm just going to grow this baby and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
I think in the back of my mind, maybe I knew that I would grow a big baby because Tristan's 6'5" and I think I was 3.8 or something. So I was like, you know, this isn't going to be a little creature in the bubba. That's just not our genetics. But yeah, we were just in shock. And then I was so hungry, as you are when you have given birth. And after I'd had a shower and stuff, Tristan got Uber Eats and it was like a falafel wrap and chips. And I just like sat in bed, hugging my newborn baby, crawling into food, and it was just the best thing ever.
So good. Oh,
they say like, oh, you know, all your hormones make you forget, but actually that those feelings, and I think I felt so lucky to be interviewed on Australian Birth Stories because I got to like capture it, and I have it forever. Yeah. Now, and I recorded that when we were quite fresh. I think Poppy was maybe 3 weeks old, but I never ever want to forget the feeling of birthing Poppy and those first few hours of meeting her.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that like time softening the edges thing again. Like I remember being like, I will never, ever forget this. Like there's no way I could forget this, but it really does. Yeah. Soften is the only way I can describe it. And at every stage from birth to, you know, all those milestones, it just, yeah, fades a little.
Yeah, so sad and strange. And something that we did a lot of, which I would recommend for anyone, is Tristan and I constantly debriefed for the next 3 days. Like we would just go over it and over it and over it. And we were like, oh, and then when this happened, and then this, hearing Tristan's version of his birth experience versus my birth experience was amazing. That really helped cement some of the really key memories that I never want to let go of. We couldn't stop. Anyway, if anyone was a fly on the wall during those first few weeks, they would be like, okay, guys, like, let it go.
I love the way you talk about birth Beth being off her face, because honestly, Beth, when I saw that photo of you with Poppy just on your chest, I mean, you are stunning, but I was like, this woman is a damn goddess. Like, you just look... oh, like so freaking powerful. It's the most magic image.
We were so lucky. The second midwife who came in to, you know, just like support the primary midwife, she did the most beautiful job. I mean, she was phenomenal anyway. I joke to her, I'm like, you're the reason that my perineum wasn't completely damaged in the birth of Poppy, because she was just so strong. And she was like, Beth, like, you just need to breathe. And she said everything that I needed to hear. But she also grabbed my iPhone and took so many photos. And I'm so grateful, because who snapped these like most amazing memories for us that we'll just never, you know, never forget.
Oh, Beth, so special. Talk to me about the first few days and weeks with Poppy. Poppy had a stay in special care, or was she in NICU, Beth?
She was in special care.
Yeah.
So really bizarrely, after the birth, she was absolutely fine. She was lusty, crying, pink, beautiful. And then at about 12 hours old, we were just doing some routine checks and found that her oxygen levels were a little bit borderline. And we investigated further. They found that she had some infection markers. So that came as a massive shock, just because I was like, oh, what? Like, she's been with me for 12 hours and I'm in the back and I haven't noticed anything. Again, just proof that I was like practically drunk on oxytocin. And they very quickly, like, it wasn't an emergency, like she was stable, but I remember one of the doctors being like, okay, yep, let's go. Let's admit to special care. And I was like, what? What is happening? And then within another half an hour, they'd put in a cannula and she was hooked up to like all of these monitors. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a bit strange. And the dust still hadn't settled. I think I remember telling mum and dad, I was like, oh yeah, like Poppy's been admitted to special care. And they were like, that's really concerning. And I was sort of like, no, like it's fine. She's fine. But I don't think I'd really clicked that she could possibly be quite sick, because maybe it's self-protection. Maybe it was just still that birth high. I don't know what it was, but I remember saying consistently like, no, she's actually fine. She's doing really, really well. And mum and dad were like, okay, well, keep us posted, you know, like that's learning. And in the end, she needed quite a lot of antibiotics, which was, again, something that it was hard to get my head around, this fresh little perfect baby needing so much medication through a drip. Yeah. I found that really, really hard to come to terms with. And I kept asking the doctors, I was like, are you sure she needs this? Like, it just seems really extreme. And they were like, a beautiful doctor sat me down and was like, these are the reasons that I think that your baby, you know, your baby does have an infection. We do really need to treat it. You know, we need to take it seriously. So we ended up in hospital for a week with her, which was so weird because, like, I'd had no signs of infection myself. And usually if a baby is sick, there's some kind of clues in mum's health. So maybe it's a temperature, or mum has, you know, had a high pulse rate or something that would give an indication that there was potentially something brewing in utero. But I'd been really healthy. The birth had gone super smoothly. She had been really well for the first couple of hours of her life. So then to just have her suddenly admitted to the special care nursery, I was like, well, this is all so strange, and my head just couldn't really catch up.
Yeah.
But interestingly, Tristan and I talk about it a lot. That first week, I was very, very lucky that by some stroke of luck, the hospital wasn't too busy that week, in that there was actually postnatal beds free. Because what happens is that if your baby is in special care and needs to stay longer than you, and there are no spare beds, then obviously, like, in a public setting or even in a private setting, if there's other people who need the beds, then they have to discharge mum. And I was so scared of leaving the hospital without her.
Yeah.
But I knew the reality of, like, I kept saying to the in-charge midwives, are you sure you don't need the bed? Like, am I going to get kicked out today? Mm-hmm. And they're like, Beth, fine. Like, we're not too busy. Just focus on Poppy. It's fine. And I was like, okay. And so we were so, so lucky that we didn't have to leave the hospital without our baby, which I know is not the case for everyone. And it was just the stars aligned for us. And when we reflect on that time, as weird as it was to be in the hospital for so long, it was actually so magical. So I birthed where I work, and had I been discharged with Poppy just routinely the day after giving birth, we would have actually gone home in the height of lockdown and not been able to see anyone. Strangely, being in the hospital for that 1 week, and Poppy ended up coming out of special care. She had to stay, but she was in her room. It was amazing. So she only had 2 days in special care, and then we had another 5 nights just in the room together. All of my girlfriends could, like, come and visit me, basically, whereas I would have had no visitors at home. And so there was not one day that someone didn't drop us a meal, bring me a coffee, come and sit with me on a night feed when they were doing their night shifts. Like, they would text me and be like, hey girl, I'm on a night shift tonight. Like, text me if you're up feeding and I'll come up and keep you company.
Oh,
and yeah, it makes me cry thinking about it, because they just, like, swarmed on us like this little group of actual angels. Yeah. And even though that of Poppy's life was tough and you know, there were some unexpected hurdles. In another weird way, it was like the world's way of making sure that Tristan and I were like surrounded by people at a time when we otherwise wouldn't have had our families. We wouldn't have had anyone be able to come into our home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have nothing but fond memories of that time and that week spent in that little hospital room with our stuff everywhere, just getting to know Poppy. Yeah, it was really, really special. And actually when we brought her home, it's scary how quickly you become like institutionalized. And like I was really, like even as a midwife, I loved when they would come and check her temperature and check her oxygen. And I'd be like, oh yes, it's time for her observations. And then suddenly that all drops away and you're at home with this little baby who 5 days ago was sick enough to be in a special care unit. And then we're just home alone with her. And I actually kept looking at her and kept checking her color and kept saying to Tristan, do you think she's pale? Like, what do you think? Like, did her lips just look a little bit dusky to you? Do you think she's a little bit blue? Mm-hmm. And he ended up being like, are you okay? Like, this is so unlike you. You're so jumpy. And I think I'd like finally let myself, my head had caught up and I'd finally let myself be like, oh, like she was sick, you know, like she needed some attention. Whereas I was just running on total like excitement and adrenaline up until that point. So that first few days at home was really strange, but I relaxed into it after a little bit of time and it was really nice. It was really beautiful.
How are you traveling mentally or emotionally at that time, Beth?
Yeah, so I was really fortunate that I actually felt, other than bringing her home and having that little like almost like a delayed onset of baby blues, I was a little bit teary, a little bit anxious. That all kind of melted away after maybe 24 to 48 hours at home when I kind of started to trust myself a bit. I was like, Poppy's okay. They wouldn't have sent us home if she wasn't. She's feeding vigorous, you know, she's doing wheeze and poos. Like I started to be a little bit more pragmatic. And I was really, really lucky that I didn't really feel like a big mood crash, which I fully thought I would, but I wouldn't say like I had any postpartum blues or anything. And look, I think there was times in my postpartum journey definitely where I felt really down and really low, but it was more about the fact that my family was so far away. And I found it really bittersweet that with like every passing week, I was like, oh, how wonderful is it that Poppy is getting bigger and growing? But, you know, my parents will never meet newborn Poppy. They'll never know what she was like for those first few weeks. And with every week that passed, I was like, it's another week they haven't met her. And to be able to hold us as a couple and a new family and like cook for us and do all of the things that I know my parents were desperate to do for us. So I think that was my biggest emotional challenge, was just the isolation of lockdown.
I think it's so important to talk about that though, because all of these families that actually became families during the pandemic, I think that there's so much that we need to grieve, right? There's a lot that we've lost and there's a lot that we've gained as well. But it's so important to talk about it because so many of us feel so alone in that, I think.
Definitely. And interestingly, I think there was a bit of something that really hurt for me, was there was this misconception among some of the people in my life that, oh, like nothing's really changed for you in lockdown because you would have just been hanging at home with your newborn anyway, right?
Yes. So it's, yeah.
A few people said that to me and it broke me. Like I heard that and I was like, you have no idea what we're going through, clearly, because everything has changed. Like there is nothing normal about two adults being alone with their baby for the first few months of that baby's life. Like
nothing. It's
not biologically normal. It's not, it's such a profound time of transition, and to do that alone more or less is hectic. And it's everything from being heartbroken that your family can't meet your baby, from being like, I remember there's this one morning and I just sat in bed breastfeeding Poppy and I just felt so teary and I just felt like, I just want my mom to be here and make me a piece of toast.
Totally. Like it's all,
I was like, I just want this like tiny little act of kindness, of one thing that I don't have to do for myself, or one thing that Tristan doesn't have to do for me. Because the other thing that was so hard about becoming a parent in the pandemic was that so much was put onto the partners, like making partners, like you have to really help them. And it's like, but then there's no support for the support people. Like they're becoming parents too and they're exhausted and they're often juggling return to paid work. And it's a lot for them to then hold up this new mother who is just going through so much.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I don't know if any of that resonates, because I know that you've experienced it as well, Charlotte. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but it was really, really hard.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a little croaky throat because it's giving me prickly eyes, but absolutely. And working in the space that I work in as a postpartum doula, like watching families do this, it's heartbreaking, because we were absolutely never, ever, ever, ever meant to do this alone. And I think that the realities of lockdown have seen so many of our support systems drop away, from little things like maternal child health or family health appointments happening in a different way, and Zoom parents group. Like, these things weren't meant to look like this. And I think it's important to kind of sit with that and acknowledge that grief, because it's hard. It's really bloody hard.
Yeah. And something that I found just so exhausting emotionally and physically was that the rules when Poppy was really little was that you could meet up outside, but you had to be, you weren't allowed to like have a picnic or be stationary. So it was like hard lockdown. You can be out and about, but you had to be moving basically. And so I was like lost in this thing of like, for my mental health, I desperately need to get out of the house. I desperately need to see people. Or not so much get out of the house, because I was happy in my little cocoon, but I did feel like I needed to talk to friends, or like, you know, just have people around me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I know I need that, but the only way I'm allowed to get that is to be pushing my baby in a pram around a park. And when you're 3 weeks postpartum, you have stitches, you are bleeding, your boobs are like still regulating, your baby needs to feed on demand, so they need to feed at the drop of a hat. They also, like, you know, now Poppy would probably feed really beautifully in public, but like 3-week-old baby needs to be practically skin to skin. Like, it's not this cute little slip and slot. It's like the whole boob needs to be out. You're like brushing the blocking down their cheek to like get them to latch properly. Like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, totally.
I remember this one day, like, the weather was nice, so we went out and met someone, and like then the weather turned and Poppy needed a feed, and so I was like breastfeeding this tiny baby on a park bench in the wind, all just so that, you know, you could see someone, see a friend. And I just remember I got home and I just cried and I was like, this is so hard. I can't tell you how much I just wish my friend could come inside, sit on the couch, and I could just feed my brand new baby in the comfort of my track pants while she made me a cup of tea. Like, that is all I wanted. But the rules were that obviously no one could come into our homes, so it pushed us out into the community far, far sooner than we were ready to be, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, on reflection, like, that was so challenging, just having to like go on a walk if you wanted to talk to someone. It's like, I'm 3 weeks postpartum. Like, I don't want to go on a walk.
No. Like,
I want to sit on my couch.
Yes. Drink a cup of tea and, yeah, just be in that moment.
Exactly. And not have to bundle your baby up in like 1,000 layers and hope that they won't crack it in the pram or the hour that you're out and about. So I think the ripple effect of the lockdowns on families are just so profound. And there's like 1,000 things that are maybe not obvious but are incredibly challenging for that time. And I'm so happy for families who are becoming families now that they won't have to go through that. Cause I just wouldn't, there was so much joy in that time because we were obviously getting to know Poppy, and I feel so grateful for so much of it, but there was some times that were really, really tough as well.
Yeah. Oh, Beth, it's so challenging. Talk to me about life as a family of three now. What's family life look like for you?
Yeah, it's so much fun. So Truce is a teacher and has been working from home for quite a while. And I think that that has allowed us a lot of bonding time, and I've loved it. Like, having him, obviously he's working, but he's in the house, so there's no commuting. And as soon as he's done with his day, he can just be back with us, has been so special. And I think it's really special to be in Poppy's relationship.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, every day is a little bit different. Pops is only 3 months old, so we're still finding our groove. But we do find that having had both of us home for so long, it's really easy to like split that time. And I would say he does just as much of the Poppy duty as I do. Obviously, we do different things because, like, you know, she's breastfed, so that's one thing that he can't jump in with. But there's just so much that he does as well. And life is pretty slow. Like, we just kind of hang out with her. This is our first weekend just gone that we actually are allowed to leave the house. So most of our time is just spent like playing with her on the mat or popping her in the pram for a little walk around the park. Bringing her into bed with us in the morning is the most fun because she's so smiley. Just waking up and it's just that time where like everyone has sleepy eyes and your baby's really cool and giggly and you're just like, oh, what a way to start the day.
So special.
So yeah, like I don't know what else to say about family life. It's been very slow and steady and there's been challenges. Like, you know, you mentioned that your bubby will be 2 in January. So like you would know all about sleep challenges and the ups and downs of navigating that and the overwhelming world sleep is. But like I said, you know, we're finding our place and we're finding our groove and figuring out what works for us and getting to know this little baby who changes like every week.
Yes. Oh, yes. We were talking about that before we started recording. But yeah, that like, oh, how quickly things change and evolve. And I was saying how I would kind of feel like a little bit sad at each of those milestones when things were changing, but then like you fall in love like harder and faster every single time. It's just the wildest thing.
Yeah, it's so bizarre to think like when I met you I thought I couldn't love you anymore. Yeah. But every day by I'm like more in love with you. And yeah, I don't know, and I feel like Poppy just started doing this hugest thing that up until now she's obviously been like, you know, little floppy kind of newborn vibes, but she's just started to like hook her arm over my shoulder when I'm carrying her. I'm like, actually hold on. And I just like, I live for it. I'm like, oh my God, I never want to. You're just so divine. And that those moments of you're like, oh, you're finally giving a little bit back to me. Like it happens when they smile and you're like, oh, incredible. And I think they know in a way when depleted, because the other night I was feeding her at about 4 a.m. and I was trying to bounce her back to sleep, sitting on my football, and I had this thought in my head of like, I am so tired, like I feel empty. And then she looked up at me and kind of giggled and I was like, you are just so precious. Like it just they know when to like how far to push you in a way and then give you enough to be like, just keep going, mama. Like, I need you. Just hang in there a little bit longer. And you're like, yeah, absolutely, I can do this.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like you keep saying, like, it's just wild and it's just a roller coaster. There's no other way to describe it.
No, absolutely not. Let's talk about matrescence. Have you experienced an identity shift in yourself?
It's so hard to say because I think it happens so gradually. It's hard to spot this single moment that you change. Yeah. But I do think that being Poppy's mom has changed me. It's challenged me in so many ways. And I think like the guilt that you feel for a lot of your decisions and that feeling of never really quite knowing if what you're doing is right.
Yes.
I think that's new to me because I've never had a decision that holds as much weight as the daily decisions that you make around your baby. So it's been a really new experience of like having to interrogate self-doubt constantly.
Yeah.
And be like, why do I feel like this? Is it because of that thing I read on Instagram? Or is it because I genuinely concerned? You know, going to a parents group meetup and hearing other people's experiences and watching their babies and thinking, oh, that's weird. Like, why doesn't Poppy do that? Or, oh, they seem to not have trouble with that. I wonder why we're struggling with that so much. Or, and I'm sure they're feeling exactly the same thing, vice versa. I think it's universal. That has been a really interesting change for me.
Mm.
To just have this constant loop of thoughts of like, am I doing this right? And I think that has probably been the most notable like change in me. And I also think it's just softened me. Like I often get asked like, how did having a baby affect your midwifery? And it's hard to say because I haven't been back practicing clinically. But prior to Poppy and experiencing pregnancy myself, I think I found it really easy to be super evidence-based, super decisive, super objective and just give the information and just leave it out there for people to take it or leave it. Whereas, having experienced like the full heart explosions and the worry and the joys and the lows and challenges of growing and birthing and now raising a baby, I struggle to see anything in black and white because I'm like, it's all just gray. Like it's just murky. There's an exception to every rule. everything is different. Every mother is different. And that as well, like, I'm like, I wonder how that will work when I'm back in a clinical environment. I wonder what that will look like for me.
Yeah. Oh, I think it, yeah, it really shapes your practice, doesn't it? This is big head and heart work.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think it's just softened me. I think if I can say anything, like, I just, so much more crying, but I, not because I'm like depressed. It's just, you're just so tearful because you're like, I'm so in love with you and I just want to get this right and I want you to be happy and I want you to be healthy. And I'm also really tired, but I'm weirdly energized as well. Like, it's just this big, messy time. And maybe in that sense, I have experienced a matrescence, and because I'm in it, I can't really pick it apart yet, but maybe in another little while I'll see it a bit clearer.
Yeah. And you're right. It's so slow and steady, and every day you're growing right alongside Poppy. So it's hard to see that in the moment. It's only when you kind of reflect back that you're like, oh, my gosh, look at how much has changed.
Yeah. And I think going back to like chatting about lockdown and that experience, I actually don't know if I've been able to give myself the space and time for that change, because I've been, like so many other mums, I think I've been in a level of survival mode of just being like, because we didn't know when lockdown was going to end. We didn't know when borders were going to open up. So I felt like there was many days where I just had to say to myself, like, Beth, this is it. Like, you're in it and you've just got to keep going. And there wasn't as much time. Like, the postpartum experience that I'd imagined, which was like me snuggled up in bed with my baby and my mom and dad around me bringing me bowls of soup, like, just never happened. And it was much more like, you just have to get up and get dressed and keep going. And so I think maybe I will have like a delayed, more of a delayed matrescence and a time later in life where I will reflect and be like, oh yeah, that was my time of becoming a mum. Whereas like, I think at the moment I'm still in that zone of just like, you just need to keep moving.
You articulate that so perfectly, Beth, because you're just kind of running, right? We've really got to create some space to feel all of the feelings, because we've been through so darn much.
So much. And my sister said something to me the other day and it made me like, she said, you know, I've booked flights to come down. She lives in Canberra. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to finally be able to look after you. Like, I'll just hold Poppy while you sleep. And I had two thoughts. One was like, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And then I had another thought of like, that ship sailed. Like, we've gone through all the hard, like, I needed that so desperately like 2 months ago, but now, you know, she's sleeping longer stretches overnight. Like, we've gotten through that really acute bringing your baby home and when you need that village. And it made me kind of sad because I was like, I do have people in my life that like would have been there, but we were so robbed of that. And I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, well, thanks for the offer. But like, yeah, we're on the other side now. Like, it's, yeah, I don't know. It was just like a really weird thought. We didn't think help was on the way, so we just had to keep going, and now we've done it.
Yeah. And then just kind of sitting with that as well. Like, when you finally get to have your fam holding your sweet pops, like, oh my gosh, sitting with those feelings and giving yourself the time to just be like, oof, we did it, but it's okay now to need some of that like really early postpartum support, because this is a big, big job, a big and beautiful job, and we need a whole lot of hearts and hands to do this work.
Definitely. And I'm so glad that people will now, hopefully we don't see these lockdowns again and people will get the village that is talked about so much, because I think that's another challenge for people who have become a parent in the pandemic, is all you hear about is it takes a village, we lock the village. And then you feel like you're like, oh, like, my village is my partner.
Yeah. And a partner is not a village.
Oh, yeah. And it's so unfair on them. And people do what they can. Like, I want to be really open and say, like, I had amazing people, like, dropping food off at my door and, like, all of that stuff. And people did as much as they could. But, yeah, it's so nice to hear that. I mean, I'm sad that you experienced all of this, but it is nice to, like, process and talk about all of these ups and downs with someone who also became a mum when the world felt like it was like tilted on its side and everything just felt really like your expectation versus the reality that you just kind of have to keep going.
Yeah.
And it's made me, I think everyone who welcomes a baby feels this way. And I don't know if this is what drives your work, but having become a mum, when I have girlfriends now who are welcoming babies, I just can't wait to like cushion them in so much love and support because
yeah.
I know you just how needed it is and how vulnerable you feel and how like someone passing you, yeah, a piece of toast or like a bowl of pasta, you're just like, oh, how amazing is this? Like,
totally.
I didn't have to think about this food and someone's just feeding me.
Oh, food is 100% my love language. So hearing you talk about that piece of toast, I'm like, yes, so magic.
Yeah, exactly. I think Tristan has made me endless pieces of toast. Like, so many snacks handed to me when I was food.
So special. The village building is really important because I think so much of us default to this idea of like our parents will come in and support us as we become parents. But like you, I don't have parents based in Nam or in Victoria. And for me and my partner, we really had to think quite creatively about what our village would look like or who our kin were. Talk to me a little bit more about that for you and Tris and Poppy.
Yeah, so I would say that we probably didn't actively think it through enough because there was an assumption that we both have families that we're close with and we're not in the state that we live in, that we just sort of assumed that the help would be on the way if and when we needed it. And in hindsight, that was quite a naive approach, not just because of lockdown, but just because of the many tiny and ongoing ways that you need to rely on your village. I think I kept thinking about support and postpartum as like, oh, the first like 4 weeks after you bring your baby. But actually, the first 4 weeks is when they're, what I found, yeah, you're up all night, but they're like these beautiful, dozy, sleepy bobbers that will just come off the boob and fall back asleep wherever you put them. And then it's, I've found anyway, that like that period of time where they've woken up and demanded a lot more of me physically is when I would desperately need someone to be around. So I think that was something that we, in all of our preparation, really overlooked. And I think that's why your work is so important in like really reminding people like, no, no, like you need a network of people around you. And if you don't naturally have that and it's not something that will fall into place organically, you need to seek it. I think what saved us was that this beautiful group of midwives that I'm friends with from work really rallied around us. And I think they were the ones that were consistently dropping over meals and checking in on us. And I think being midwives, they sort of knew like how to do that. Whereas like, I think I have a lot of beautiful friends, but most of my friends don't have babies and maybe haven't been around new babies. There's probably a bit of a rift between what they think life with a baby is like and what it actually is like. So it's not that they didn't want to support. I think that a lot of people just don't know how.
Yes.
I think that there's so much love there. People just don't know what to do. Whereas my midwife girlfriends, I'd just get a text being like, hey, like, don't make lunch today. I'm dropping something over. And then they would just drop over like some rolls and food and like a whole bunch of snacks and just leave it at the door and that kind of thing. Or just like, hey, like, I'm on my way to a shift. I'm just dropping over a quiche. Like, just really little things that made our lives so much easier. And it was like they just knew on a particularly rough day, like we'd be having a bit of a rough day. And then I would just get a text from one of them being like, oh, hey, like I've just popped a pasta bake. It's just on your doorstep. Have a good day, XX. And I'm like, what on earth? Like, you literally must have like known that we were just up all night and we've just had a bit of a rough one.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was lucky that there was a small group of girls that really just showed up. And then it kind of made up for the fact that I was very ill prepared. But I think that it's a lesson I've learned. And if I'm lucky enough to have more babies in the future, it's something that I will be proactive about, and it's something that I will be proactive about in helping others create as well, and just making sure that I'm there for other people, because asking for help is so hard. We all talk about how we're going to do it, and if push comes to shove and you just feel super awkward being like, hey, can you make me dinner tonight?
Totally. Yeah.
A really weird thing, like even my mum would be like, what can I do, like can I order some food, can I, you know, whatever. And I would just be like, oh, like, I don't know. Can't, you know.
Yeah, we're
okay. We're actually all right. It's like, well, don't say no to the food. Don't go crazy.
Never say no to the food.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, I'm part of a, we did start our parents group on Zoom, but we've been fortunate that we've been able to like meet up and have a few picnics. And yeah, I do think you do a lot of your village building in the after bit in preparation for like future village needs, if that makes sense. Like you do get lots of other people that are at the same stage of life and already just having that like little brains trust to swap information with. Like I had a coffee with one of them this morning and it was like, oh, we're just having a massive drama like with so-and-so taking the bottle. And I was like, oh, we were there 2 weeks ago. We just couldn't crack it. And then we just were able to have like a really great chat about some different things we've tried. And even just having that little web of people to throw ideas out there and be like, hey, is anyone struggling to sleep? Or like, my baby hasn't been in 4 days. Like, what should I do? All those weird little things that you need your village for, as well as all of the support. I'm learning. I'm definitely learning.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? Just having like people right there in the thick of it with you is actually really powerful, because you don't even necessarily need the solution. You just need someone bearing witness and like understanding exactly what it's like to be like, yeah, this shit is hard and you're doing a really good job.
Yeah, like it's really confusing. I'm sorry. Okay. And actually I've got a friend from work who's got a baby like a week younger than Poppy, and I we have like a WhatsApp that is basically just a running thread of our day. Like, hey, how did you go for nap one? Yeah, pretty good. A little bit grizzly, so got up for a cuddle and then did a poo and then and I got them up for a burp. Like a conversation that if anyone else read, they'd be like, this is so boring. It's this constant reaffirming of like, you're not alone. I'm literally in a house two suburbs over doing the exact same thing. And yeah, technology can't completely fill the gap, but we are very lucky that it's like a band-aid for the times that we can't be together. I was joking to Tristan that like when Poppy was like 8 weeks old, I said, I've never been more motivated to join a commune.
I know. Yes, sign me up.
Because I just need to be with all the other mums who are rocking their babies to sleep. Like, you're not meant to be doing this alone.
Yeah.
You know, sister wives, I'm happy to leave. Because if it means that I'm with some other women and some other parents,
yes,
I'm into it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we'll have the chickens, everyone will be happy, the babes will be running around. Sign me up. And I really love you touched on something there that I really want to go back to a bit, because you're so right in saying that postpartum isn't just those first 4 weeks, or that you get to that 6 week marker and we've got this really wild idea. Things are going to like fall back into place, whatever the heck that kind of means. Postpartum is forever, and you need and deserve good care and support all of the way through this journey.
Definitely. Yeah, it's something I even felt a bit of angst around the 6 week mark, because I was like, am I just meant to be like back to pre Poppy Beth? Like what am I meant to be doing? Like, am I meant to be like out exercising? Am I meant to look like I did before I had a baby? There's this real kind of narrative, I think, for babies around the first 6 weeks, and that, oh, if you can just get to the 6 week mark, it all settles down and they all just kind of fall into place. And I personally found that the next 6 weeks were way harder.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I've really found that shift from like sleepy newborn into baby that changes every 3 days, and yeah, just busy. And also like you get to 6 weeks and that those hormones start to simmer down and the fatigue really starts to set in, because anyone can do sleepless nights for a period of time. No one's questioning that, but it does start to accumulate. And I think that is something that we forget when we talk about like postpartum and getting mums and dads through that first little part, but then it all just kind of drops off and they're still in it.
Yeah, we really need to change our thinking around that, right? And I think people like you being really honest about your experience, that makes a difference, because we can feel quite alone in that, or that, oh, heck, maybe there's something not right with me because I don't feel like myself. For me personally, I 100% know that Charlotte that walked into that birth suite, she didn't walk out of that space. You're an entirely different person.
Everything shifts, doesn't it? Like, just, and then you have to learn how to piece it all back together, but like, it's not going to look the way that it did before. And even your relationship changes forever and your, yeah, I don't know. It's so hard to put words to, but I completely agree with you. Like there's just this sudden major, major change. You're trying to process it while you're in it. I think that's the other hard. It's not like any other life change where you might, like, say if you got offered a new job and they were like, oh, you know, you've got a new job opportunity in Spain, but you've got 6 weeks to think about it. You would like process the thought of like, okay, I'm moving to Spain and what would it look like and where would I live and who would I be friends with and whatever. But then you're kind of so unprepared for the change that is motherhood because nothing can prepare you. And so you're in it and you're trying to understand it all at once and it's full on.
It's really full on. Beth, if you could go back and tell yourself anything or something that you would even like to tell yourself today as a reminder, what would you say?
Oh my gosh. I think I would just tell myself that there's no wrong decision. Just that the thousands of little choices that you make when you're a parent about everything, like feeding and sleep and sleep space, and like I can't even think of them. There's so many micro decisions.
Yeah.
Sleeping and settling and reading to them and all of the things that you do to try to build their brain and nourish them and make sure that they're safe and well and happy. There's no wrong decision because when you make decisions out of love, whatever you do will be fine.
Yes. A million yeses.
Yeah. But yeah. It's easy to tell others that. And then when you're in it, you're like, you're not doing it right.
Yes. Yeah. Or there was like, yes, when I was on Instagram way too late last night, I did see something that was actually, yeah. I hear you.
Something is so hard because I'm part of it. So I try, I hope my feed would never make anyone feel, but context is everything. So it doesn't matter what you're posting. Depending on where someone is in their journey and how things have played out for them, there'll always be someone that is like second guesses themselves from what they read. And so sometimes I just have to step away from like scrolling.
Yeah.
Because it might be like one quote that's pulled from a study about something and you're like, oh my gosh, like spiral, spiral, spiral.
Yeah.
But it actually, I don't know, it's such a weird space. Like I love Instagram. It's given me so much. And I truly believe that it is, if you let it and if you curate your feed, it can be an incredibly positive platform.
Yes.
For connection and sharing of knowledge and especially for female-owned business. I think it's like such an amazing space. But then I also think you have to have boundaries within yourself to know when to just put the phone down.
Totally.
Stop following those pages, or maybe just, you know, dip out for a little while until you find your feet. And then when you're feeling confident in your choices, you can go back in because things won't be as triggering for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just finding that balance, right, of tuning out some of that noise. And for some of us, having those reassuring bites of information pop up is actually really positive at this time. But yeah, it's about following the right people, and the right people for you will be really different to the right people for the next family that comes along.
Yes, exactly. And that's something I think I've learned, is just that what you expect and what your reality is might be different. And that's because babies are so, so, so unique. And yes, there are some things that I thought I wouldn't do that have worked really, really well. And then there's some things that I thought were going to be great.
Yeah.
I've tried to force a co-sleeping relationship on Poppy.
She's not engaging.
He's not into it. And I'm like, just lie down with mom. Like, just go to sleep. And she's just like, no, babe. Like, I want my own space. I just need to be away from you. Like,
come here, farm, mom.
Literally, she's like, can you just put me in the bassinet and just let me be? I was like, I had all these visions of like, you know, lying on my side, breastfeeding all through the night and just like, snuggling with my babe. And she's just into it. And so I've had to really just let it go. But there's a thousand things like that, right? Where you're just okay, totally. You're the leader. I just have to follow. And you just tell me what you need and we'll just figure it out together.
My goodness, yes. Beth, it has been such a delight chatting with you today and hearing your story. Thank you so much for speaking so openly and honestly. It's been such a delight to be welcomed into your family.
Thank you so much for having me, Charlotte. It was so lovely just to chat and debrief and reflect on the joy and chaos that the last few months have been.
It is such a joy to share these stories with you each week. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review,
or share it with someone in your very own kin. You can see all of the gorgeous images of the families that join me each week and get the latest news from Kin on Instagram @KinByCharlotte. I can't wait to chat with you next week.